the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL Wire site covering the Arizona Cardinals. And with me is co-host Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, the SB Nation Arizona Cardinals site. And we are on episode 411 on a recording on a Tuesday night, as is typical. We only had the one show last week. I'll be honest, I kind of wanted to do another show, but it was my worst birthday at the end of last week, and I just didn't want to do it. So sorry, guys. Sorry.
Well, to be fair, also, there wasn't really much to talk about after the last show with nothing happening until this weekend, and then,
a bunch of stuff happened. We did get two linebacker signings, two more linebackers.
Yeah, I mean, it's exciting.
Who knew? Steve Keim was still working in the building, signing all the inside line, all the off the ball linebackers.
Yeah, I mean, we gotta get ready for special teams, right?
So, in this edition of the show, 411, we're going to talk about the two signings that happened over the week since last Tuesday. Jonathan Gannon spoke to the media on Tuesday, so we will talk a little bit about that. About a couple of the highlights, and later this week I'll delve more into that, I think. More Seth and I will both do that. And it's betting time. The 2023 win totals are out for the over-under set for win projections, and the Cardinals have it bad. So let's start with the addition of our two new off-the-ball linebackers, and one would be Josh Woods, former Detroit Lions player. That signing, you know, you're like, oh boy, another Langer. But he makes sense. He's just a special teams guy. He's the guy that's replacing. He's the guy that, you know, he fills the role that Camu Grugier-Hill / Tanner Vallejo / Joe Walker had. If he plays, you know, or another Zeke Turner. He was a captain on Detroit. And then the second one is Chris Barnes. And he actually had starting. And so now you've got another guy who's done a lot of starting to a linebacker room where you already have three starters. What should we know about Woods and Barnes?
I think you nailed it with Woods. It's one of those signings where he is 100% a special teams guy. I mean, he is the guy that is kind of the captain of the special teams. He is a playmaker. I know Ron Wolfley was a fullback, but it's kind of, you know, that type of guy, right? Like a guy that is going to play on all the specials, sans field goal block, and he's going to be a guy that, you know, puts up 25, 27 tackles on the season. And like you said, if he's on the field, it's a negative. And that brings us to the second signing of Chris Barnes, right?
Yeah, a guy that I'm sure I remember the name. I think we talked about him back before he got drafted.
Yeah, and basically Barnes is here to be the main backup. And so that's the thing is, like, you look at what they're doing, and, you know, we talked about with Daly, ideally with Froholt, you know, they're bringing in depth. So it's ready to go, ready-made depth. If those, you know, Barnes is a better starter than Froholt or Daly in his career, just from a output standpoint, right?
Right. He's had, if you're looking more at success, you'd think he's kind of more of like their signing of Nick Vigil last year. Only right. Vigil they projected as a starter, kind of, sort of, yeah. But it's kind of that sort of signing, a guy who has pretty okay starter play, but
it's the classic guy you're always looking to replace. So if it's your lead backup, you're like, hey, this is really good depth. Whereas, like, if he's your starter, you're like, we probably could upgrade this position, right? And so I don't think there's any issues with that. As long as they don't go draft, you know, a guy now, like, I feel like it makes sense because you have Isaiah Simmons. You have
Zaven Collins, Kaiser White.
And then if you do draft Will Anderson, you're basically you're full. I mean, your linebacker room's full as is, but like if you know, so the other thing it makes me wonder, and this is, you know, a conversation for another day, but something that you and I have heard a lot of whispers about is, you know, and they haven't picked up Isaiah Simmons' fifth-year option yet.
They still technically have over a month.
Right. And so I don't want anybody to think it's a panic or anything like that. But it makes me wonder, and I want to get your opinion on this. Do we think that they're going to try Simmons in the Hassan Reddick role? And if so, are these murmurs about their desire to move down more about that they don't want to feel like they have to draft Will Anderson Jr.? I mean, obviously they want the extra picks that will be, you know, garnered with that. But, you know, we've heard from multiple people that they have an infatuation with both Tyree Wilson and Christian Gonzalez. So like, could it just be the idea that like, hey, if we move out of three, you know, we've got Simmons in this role already. We want to see what he can do in this role. You know, we've got that. All that does is that makes it a little bit easier to be like, hey, we didn't take Will Anderson because we moved. And by the way, we got, you know, an extra second round pick and the next year's second round pick from the Las Vegas Raiders. You know, maybe that I know I'm just kind of speculating, but like it would make sense why they've put an emphasis on adding like a Barnes and a Kaiser White.
Because
like you said, those are both guys with really big starting experience, you know, and especially White in Gannon's defense.
And the White signing made sense from the beginning. Barnes is interesting, and also with on the heels of the news that came on Tuesday that Isaiah Simmons apparently had an injury that he got good news about. So it's kind of that I'm interested. Or for me, and Gannon talked about on Tuesday the idea of having versatility, guys who can play multiple spots. I'm really intrigued, like how maybe they need Simmons, so they need another guy to come in because, you know, they're going to be, you know, sliding Isaiah Bauk out to the slot, have him rush in the passer, having to do multiple things. They don't know exactly. He didn't seem to think that that they were going to have they aren't going to kind of define yet what he does because they want to see him on the field first. But and there's also the possibility, you know, let's throw this out there, that it will they whether they're waiting to do that, but you know he's got the fifth year option coming up, and Buda Baker would be in a position where they could move him next offseason, and you transition Simmons to safety, which he just becomes a special safety with his size and speed, a safety with linebacker traits.
Yeah, and I think all of those things, I mean, I think the easiest explanation is it's just adding solid depth.
Right, but, and here's the thing, because Chris Barnes, if I recall, let me pull it up, it's not like he was going to get big attention because he was coming off a year in which he played last year. He only played in six games.
Right, he was injured for much of the season.
And so even though he was a starter for 2 years, essentially, for Green Bay the previous 2 years, his first 2 years in the league, when you have a year like that and you miss most of the year with injury, a guy who was a former undrafted guy, and he wasn't like a high-end starter, but he's a pretty all right starter, you're not gonna get a guaranteed starting job somewhere. And so that makes sense too. That's one of those deals where you're gonna have to prove it, and we'll see what the contract is, but I would bet that it's probably a vet minimum contract. You know, those numbers haven't come across. My bet, it's probably worth $1.23 million.
And he got 2 years as well. Is that what you just said?
I think it was just the one.
Oh, just the one. Yeah, let me see if there's anything on it yet. But yeah, so I mean, that's what I said. It's people want to always assume the worst, but I think it's just one of those situations where you just, you know, you add you add a guy that's a veteran starter that has had success in the NFL, so why not at least do that? Yeah,
it's their deal. One position that they're done at.
Right.
Okay, no. They're done at quarterback, apparently, though they could not be done if they wanted to, but at linebacker, they're done. They have everything they need.
Right, and that's what I'm saying. Like, they're, whether it's O-line depth, and we'll talk about that later, right? Or now linebacker depth. It's just, it's an interesting way to go about it. But maybe those were the positions where they felt comfortable with the starters. And people can argue about them feeling comfortable with the starters on the O-line. And liked what depth that they can bring in.
That makes sense. Coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red Podcast, best of Cardinals talk on the web. The quarterback room. Apparently they're done. We'll talk about it. That's coming next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red Podcast, best of Cardinals talk on the web. The quarterback room appears to be set. Now, I do expect them to. They will add a fourth quarterback. You need the arms for the offseason program, especially once you get to mini camp and OTAs. You need those reps. And we know Kyler Murray won't participate. We do not know to what extent that Colt McCoy will be able to participate after his minor off-season procedure, for which we do not know what that is.
But, by the way, when you say that most people know it's because of an injury, but it's because of an injury, not because he's not wanting to participate.
Oh, yeah. That's right. That's right. Kyler is not just sitting out. Kyler's rehabbing his ACL. He can't. He will be in the building. There's a lot of roster. There's a lot of bonus money tied into that. He didn't agree to that. He didn't agree to that deal to get that money. He'll be there. Kyler will be in the building. Kyler has been in the building a lot this offseason. He recently went back to Dallas to go be checked on, and you know he's ready to take the next step with some strength work. And we've seen some of the stuff on Twitter, but we talked about the David Blau signing. It appears. And even Darren Urban, who writes for the Cardinals on easycardinals.com, suggests that the Cardinals are done at the quarterback position in terms of veterans. They are actually going to roll into this season with Colt McCoy, David Blau, and either a quarterback they draft or sign as an undrafted rookie.
Yeah, and like we kind of talked about last week, I don't have a problem with it. Like, you know, I thought you were the most astute with this when it was kind of coming around. People wanted there to be more urgency for the quarterback position, thinking that if there was, this is a team that's looking to compete for 2023. And you and I kind of cautioned that it's not that they're not trying to compete, but the overall roster makeup becomes very difficult to pay another quarterback because, like we said before,
there's a lot of guaranteed money. Like, you've got the Kyler guaranteed money tied up. I mean, that's guaranteed. You've got Colt McCoy, who's got $2.5 million of guaranteed money of his more than $3 million in salary. Were you gonna pay $5 to $10 million for a more established vet? That money wise, it did roster management wise, it doesn't make sense financially.
Right, and I think that's, you know, the whole thing. I mean, were you going to give Jacoby Brissett $8 million?
Right. And then are you gonna pay Colt McCoy $3 million to be your third stringer?
Right. So now all of a sudden you have $11 million in backups when your guy comes back. And we talked about the Brissett thing, like the fact that he could go to Washington and now have a chance to start makes a huge deal. You know, same thing with Baker Mayfield, right? Like, this is a guy that wants a chance to start. The one that made, you know, maybe you can argue with is Dobbs. He got, you know, he got a 1 year, $2 million contract with the Browns. But we talked about it last
week. But is Josh Dobbs any better than David Blough?
That's what, and that's the question. And that's, you know, what's interesting is Monty was around Dobbs.
Right, exactly. So he was in the building where they had Dobbs last year.
So, like, if he wasn't putting an emphasis on it, then I'm not super concerned, you know, about it, because they obviously feel like this is the route to go.
Right, and Teddy Bridgewater, who makes a lot of sense for a lot of reasons, because he has connections with Drew Petzing. He has, you know, who else did he have connections with? But it was definitely Petzing, because Petzing was on Minnesota's staff. Well, I guess Gannon too. Both Petzing and Gannon were on Minnesota's staff when Teddy was drafted by the Vikings.
Yeah, and so you have guys that were available, but like we said, unless you were cutting McCoy and then eating that contract, and let's be honest, then you're probably not bringing back David Blough, and we just talked about it. You have to have a camp arm this offseason. You know, I'm not going to say I didn't find it necessary. I just didn't see it as the priority, but, you know, again, maybe it's about bringing realistic expectations to this.
Yeah. The interesting thing is, and I get the cut notion, the fact that Gannon and Petzing are doing a legitimate competition. It feels what will be a legitimate competition between McCoy and Blough to be the guy to start the season. I think that is partially because they don't have any connection with Colt McCoy or David Blough, honestly. David Sears, the assistant general manager, does, because he was with the Lions when he was over the director of college scouting when they brought him in as an undrafted rookie. But I think it is both the fact that they, you know, Colt McCoy had all the, he had built up a cachet of trust with Cliff Kingsbury. And so he was to Cliff what Drew Stanton was to Bruce Arians. He's not that to Jonathan Gannon. So you have him and you keep him, you respect him. Okay. But you have to compete. You're going to compete with David Blough, a guy who has seen, like, his playing time opportunities. Like, he wasn't bad. He wasn't terrible in his two starts. He's shown improvements every time he's had opportunities to play. Then he's a younger guy. And so you allow that competition and, you know, a guy who's 36, 37 years old, and you're telling him, you're setting the culture for the organization, for the roster. Okay, I don't care what you were before. You're competing. You're competing. We're gonna compete, and we're going to bring the best out of you. I have no problem with that. And if, in fact, David Blough beats out Colt McCoy, that'll be something.
Right, and good for him.
So I would guess the next quarterback that we see brought in will be one they draft in the late rounds or an undrafted rookie, I would imagine. Because they will start, they won't actually start OTAs until where they can actually throw the ball until after the draft. And so they'll have their first mini camp in the week of the draft. But that will still be phase two, so they don't do any team on team. So they are not one on one. The quarterbacks can throw the ball, but the receivers are running against nobody. They're just doing organization. They're doing one side of the ball drills. The linemen are blocking trash cans or or sleds, or the quarterbacks are throwing against air defenders and things like that, and so. They probably won't need necessarily anything else until you get to after the draft.
Right, and I think that's the accurate thing.
Coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, Spencer Cardinals talk on the web. Let's talk about the center position, because Jonathan Gannon said something quite interesting that I'm not sure I'm ready to believe. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best of our Cardinals talk on the web. Jonathan Gannon speaking to reporters at the NFL annual meeting in Phoenix, there at the Biltmore. There was a comment. They was asked about the center position, and he said that he doesn't think that they need a center because they have guys who have played or can play center on their roster. Currently on the roster, the guys who can or have played center before, one is Yeldon Froholt. He had four starts last year at center for the Browns. You have Lasita Smith, sixth-round pick last year, never played center before, but practiced at center in the offseason. And you've got a guy that they brought in on a futures deal, was former, I think, was it both Titans and Patriots offensive lineman, Hayden Howerton, who played some center at SMU in college. Those are the three centers on the roster. Do you really believe that Jonathan Gannon believes that they don't need a center because they have centers on their roster?
No, I really think this is just them talking about right now going into the draft, knowing that they're probably going to add a center. But if they don't, that there's still a bevy of veterans available that they can grab, and that's to me where they're at with this. I don't think that he's just like, yep, we're moving forward as is. I think this is just more of a concerted effort to you know, like we talked about a little bit off air, is, you know, express some belief and give your guys, you know, a little, hey, yeah, you're the guy. And then, you know, similar, you mentioned Arians with Stanton earlier. Remember, that was the plan until they were able to go get Carson Palmer. And like, there's never a problem with having a belief in a guy or things like that. But also then being realistic and grabbing his upgrade when he's available. But, you know, I think that they end up grabbing a center in the draft, whether it's, you know, a Luke Whipler or John Michael Schmitz, you know, one of those guys, or the kid out of Michigan, you know, I can't pronounce his name. I'm not going to try, but, you know, those guys are all going to be draftable and can, you know, jump in and potentially play in year one. And if you get that, then I think you're in a good spot for this year, especially when you look at it. I mean, outside of potentially Josh Jones at left guard, which we don't know about quite yet.
And, you know, also the idea that what Jonathan Gannon said is that when they brought him in, that Dennis Daly feels much more comfortable at guard.
Right. And so it might be, you know, Dennis Daly versus Josh Jones. And they look at it and they go, hey, look, these are, I mean, I know Jones isn't a veteran in number of starts, but he's a fourth year guy. Will Hernandez has been here, you know, been around. Calvin Beecham's, you guys went to high school together. I mean, he's been around forever. and then, you know, obviously Hump over at left tackle, like you can afford to have a young center in this instance. You know, maybe if you end up drafting two linemen, right, and you go, okay, you end up grabbing, you know, two, you know, a right tackle to play over Beach and then a center, you still can do that because, again, you've got veterans at the guard position. You know, the scary thing is when you put, you know, maybe two or three rookies right next to each other. But, hell, the Chiefs did it and then went to a Super Bowl right away. Like,
yeah,
you know, it's one of those situations where you just, if you get the right guys, get the right mix, everything can work itself out. You know, we know they didn't add Creed Humphrey and Orlando Brown this offseason, but Joe Thuney and Orlando Brown this offseason, but, you know, if they believe in Hump and, you know, he's probably better than Brown, and they believe in Hernandez, and then you add a Creed Humphrey and Trey Smith like player in the draft or two, you're okay to start two rookies and it doesn't hurt you.
Yeah, yeah. And my insight, my thought was, you know, if you're going by, why would Gannon say that? Well, what message do you want to send to the players on your roster? He's saying, oh, I don't think we really need a center because we've got guys who can play center. When you say, yeah, we aren't done. We're definitely looking at the center position. As a coach, if you say that to the guy that you just signed and probably were told, hey, you're going to compete for a starting job, Yelda Froholt, we know you're not the guy. Even though you just signed the guy saying that we're going to let you compete to be the guy. Now, Monty Austinfort, the general manager, can say, yeah, I think we need to upgrade, or I think we're going to look and see what's out there at center, you know, at running back, as the general manager. As head coach, no, you have to pump up your players publicly.
Well, and you think about last year. I mean, the Eagles traded up, drafted Cam Jurgens in front of the Arizona Cardinals, and all they've done since then is play Jason Kelce and then
re-sign him.
Jason Kelce. So, you know, like you said, management is planning on things. Like, and I think this is where a disconnect always comes in, is that, you know, management buys the groceries, but at the end of the day, the coach kind of prepares the meal. And if they like what they have, you know, already, there's no reason to rush it out there. And I think we've seen that a lot with the Cardinals, obviously, but it's kind of standard operating procedure. Like, I know that they talk to the players and things like that, but, you know, the Eagles are a very well-run organization, and they just drafted a center in the second round who's now going to be sitting for a second consecutive year. Maybe he gets to play with Isaac Seumalo leaving, but, you know, this is a guy that was a second round pick that may not see the field for two full years. That isn't a surprise because they were preparing for life after Kelce whenever that happens. And I'm not saying that, you know, Froholt is anywhere in that stratosphere, obviously, but you have to treat it in a similar fashion, right? Like, as a coach, you're like, oh, you're the guy. And then if a guy is just better, then you have that man-to-man conversation. You're like, hey, this guy beat you out. Like, it is what it is. But at the end of the day, I think, you know, you're going to see that they're going to add a center at some point. I just think it's that they're very confident that they can probably get one of those two guys, whether it be 34, you know, in a trade back scenario where they get, you know, pick 38 from the, let's say the Raiders, or, you know, if they end up with an extra third round pick for Hopkins and can move up.
And when we were talking before the show, you know, I felt, and maybe this is just kind of the operating procedure, you know, how they did things with Kai, is that I would find it hard to believe that they would go into the draft without having added an established starter like, you know, Ben Jones or Connor McGovern or something like that.
I just think that this offseason
that we might not see till after the draft, and maybe that's kind of the goal. My theory then is this. If Ben Jones is still the guy, because he was cut by the Titans on a failed physical, they don't need to sign him right away, and because he has a failed physical, he's probably rehabbing something.
Right, and honestly, like you said, like, you look at the veterans available, and it's a lot different than what we've seen in the years past. Like, a lot of these guys typically are getting signed, and we talked about it a little bit last week. Josina Anderson has said, like, agents are not happy. Like, they don't like the way that this offseason is going. And it's because you're seeing so many 1 and 2 year contracts from all teams. You know, everybody was looking at the Cardinals and foreshadowing the negativity of, like, hey, this is going to be, you know, they're preparing for life after Kyler. That's why they're signing all these guys to 2 year deals. It's like, this is something that's going on around the league. They're basically not paying guys long-term. And it sucks. It is what it is. You and I always are on the side of the players in the situation. But, you know, at the end of the day, the NFL dictates things. So it's one of those situations where the Cardinals are taking advantage of the market and signing a lot of 1 and 2 year deals, because that's what where the market is right now. And I think you're going to see that play out into May after the draft.
And so that's a possibility. I kind of like the idea that if that's the way, is they're going to go into the draft hoping to get a guy like, you know, apparently if you read, I think it's the, what's the
Pro Football Network.
Tony Pauline, big draft guy, goes at all the pro days, talks to people, that he was told flat out that the Cardinals will draft Luke Whipler. Now, what does that mean? We don't know. There's a lot of moving parts for that. But Ohio State's Luke Whipler, if you listen to the, if you listen to Seth's podcast with Justin Higdon, when they were doing player comps, the show that they did on player comps, then you will come away from that very, very positive when it comes to Luke Whipler, because one, obviously he has a good play, so he's a solid day two pick. But you look at his physical comps, that even from low end to high end, they're solid starting centers, which is fantastic. So Luke Whipler has me excited. If you listen to the show that he just recorded, where they brought in Sully Chiefs, who's their offensive line guru, he's not as excited about Luke Whipler. That said, there are two or three really solid centers out there. Something John Michael Schmitz will end up going in the first round is interesting. Jefferson over DraftWire, my network. He wrote, and there's five or six prospects who probably should be drafted in the first round who probably won't. And he listed Schmitz as one of those that might be perfect. If Schmitz falls out of the first round, the Cardinals have the third pick in the second round. Boom. Solve your center position problem. Or you get two picks. And this is actually what I did in my most recent mock draft simulation from last weekend, is I got a pick. So we got 34, and I ended up with 38 because the Raiders traded up. And I traded out of 34 down to 42. And then I drafted a guard, Steve Avila out of TCU with number 38, and then Luke Whipler, center Ohio State, with 42. Kind of the scenario that Seth was talking about just a moment ago, which wouldn't be that scenario.
And that would be super ideal. I mean, like you said, you look at it, if you can, you know, and again, like, I want to emphasize that everybody's got opinions. None of them are gonna be right, and that's okay. But when you look at the consensus big board, which is at NFLMockDraftDatabase.com, I highly recommend it this time of year. You can just literally just go in and click the consensus big board. 114 big boards compiled, so you can look at it and say, okay, this is where, you know, the average of these guys is falling. And you look at a guy like Schmitz, right? He falls in the 40s. So you feel fairly confident at 34, right? Like fairly confident, not overly confident, but fairly confident. And then a guy like Whipler, who's considered to be like the number two guy, or Tippmann's technically the number two guy, but they're right next to each other at 66 and 70. So like, and their peak, so like the top of any big board that has them right now, Schmitz is at 43, Tippmann's at 52, Whippler's at 59. So like you're just looking at guys that, you know, are probably going to be available in that 34 to 67, is that what they pick? 60-ish?
66, I think.
66, yeah, into that range. And that's, you know, again, that's kind of what you're hoping to see, right? Like you're able to, if, and again, we're not even considering a trade down scenario in this, but like if you stay at three, you know, you take Will Anderson and then you sit at 34 and you can grab a John Michael Schmitz. I mean, obviously Will Anderson's a sexy pick. You're talking about a pass rusher, but John Michael Schmitz is not a sexy pick by any means. Like it's not, but it could be a pick that changes kind of the outlook of this team in a very positive way.
Yeah. Yeah. Coming up next on the Rise Up Series podcast, the best of Carlos talk on the web. Let's come back and talk about our last segment, which is about projected win totals. The Cardinals have a low one. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Best of Cardinals talk on the web. Win totals are out. What, that doesn't really matter for anything other than bettors, people who like to bet on futures. But what this means is that we kind of get a picture as to what the national kind of expectation is for the type of team that you're going to see. And I believe actually on my next, on the show that I do later in the week, I might do a solo pod that talks about all of the, you know, I dabble in some sports gambling stuff. I'm not a degenerate, but I do write for Sportsbook Wire. That's one of the things that I do. Talk about my insights when it comes to the win totals across the league. But Cardinals come in dead last, tied with the Houston Texans. Again, the Houston Texans, who are an absolute disaster, right? The Cardinals and the Houston Texans have the lowest projected win total in the NFL. The betting line, they set the over-under at 5.5, which means the expectation is the Cardinals will be bad, right? That's essential. So we expect nationally, in terms of betting, odds are that the Cardinals are going to be one of the worst teams in the league in 2023.
Yeah, and you know, you and I were talking a little bit off the air about it. It makes sense. I mean, I know fans don't want to hear this, but like you look at it, you're a team that won four games last year. There's uncertainty about when your franchise quarterback's going to be back. There's questions about your franchise quarterback in general. Whether or not you and I agree with them or is irrelevant, but those are questions that are asked. And then from there, you have a roster that won four games that you're turning over, but it's not like you're upgrading everywhere. I mean, you're very hamstrung in the salary cap. You're looking at a, you know, what is a 2-year kind of dig out of this hole, unless you figure out that your franchise quarterback is a franchise quarterback, right? Like if Murray gives you extra boost and all of a sudden, you know, he's able to lead you to 6 or 7 wins in 2023, then all of a sudden you look at it and you go, oh, okay, then we're on the right path. We're in a good spot. We just need to make sure we get the pieces around him. If he misses a giant portion and comes back, doesn't look like himself, and you win 3 games or 4 games, that's when you start to go, okay, you know, this might be, era might be over soon. And, you know, you're looking at Drake May or Caleb Williams and you're starting those things. But yeah, I mean, I'm not surprised, I guess, by that. 5.5 seems about right. You know, they won 4 games last year. Ideally, even coming off, you know, a regime change with what is probably the worst roster cap situation combination in the NFL, you would be able to improve. But I mean, 2 games is a lot. That being said, the Cardinals lost 4 games last year that they were in a position to win. So maybe, you know, maybe you look at it and you go, huh, maybe they could end up winning, you know, that that Philadelphia game. Maybe they can end up winning that Minnesota game. Maybe they do win that Chargers game, right? Like all of a sudden, you know, maybe they do hold on in against the Broncos or Tampa Bay or Atlanta. Like, all of those games were, I mean, so there's more than four, but like four where they could have potentially got a stop. It, you know, and so I it's not unexpected, but at the same time, it does suck that you're mentioned with the Texans, right?
Absolutely. Now, the thing is, when you look at the line, so you've got the, for those of you who aren't degenerates, who do not follow gambling as much as many of us do, there are basically two different ways for sports books to adjust how you bet. So you have the you have to set the over under, so your projected total, so you can move that up and down, and ultimately you try to set it where it's going to try and get fairly even money on both sides. You can also mess with the line for each of those, for the over or the under, or the price or the amount of risk, which the larger the negative number, or the more negative the number, means the more likely the outcome is considered to happen. And if you have positive odds, that's, you know, that's considered a much, it's a riskier bet, and therefore the payout is better. So if you look at that, so standard, if it's considered basically 50-50, you will see a minus 110 is what the line is for an over under. So if they kind of think that that's right in the sweet spot, they will, where you can kind of get 50% over and 50% under on bets, that minus 110 is where that's at. To give you a little more sadness for the Cardinals, is that they have the projected lowest tied with the Texans win total. They also, if you look at the line, is you also have so the Texans, for example, their over under is at 5.5, but the over and under each is priced at minus 110, so 50-50 basically. Actually, they think it's as likely that they will have five wins as they will have fewer than five wins, kind of the equal shot. The Cardinals, though, the under is minus 130, and the over is plus 110, meaning that there is a slightly more, that there is a more likely a case that they will finish with five or fewer wins than they will finish with six or more. Implied odds at minus 130, it's kind of a 57% chance implied odds that they will have five or fewer wins. And at plus 110, it's about 46, 47% implied odds that they will have over that. So if you combine the lowest projected win total and add in the factor of the projected of the lines for each of the betting for the over the under, they actually are viewed as the worst team in the NFL because they have a more likely under odds, more likely under odds than the Texans do. That's freaking awesome. That said, do I like plus 110 on the over? Yes, I do. Because that you know, you get more money, you know, if you bet 100, then you win 110, so you get your 100 back, so you get a $210 payout, so you more than double your money, as opposed to getting something less than what you bet for the under. I do like the potential for the Cardinals to get to six wins, you know, if Kyler comes back, if they can sneak a win or two while he's out, or just even win, and he comes back and he plays well, and that offensive scheme gets going, the defense picks things up late. You know, I actually, in terms of as a bet, I like the Cardinals were over.
Yeah, and like I said, I can see where the NFL is coming from this, and as long as Kyler plays three quarters of the season or more, I would take the over, because I think they can sneak out one game in 4 to 5 games, and then I think, you know, with Kyler they can go 500.
Yeah.
And you know, so if he misses five games, but you know, he can go 6-6 or 6-7, I can see that.
Yeah. But why is it so low? Well, there's a lot of, like, they won four games last year. They don't look like they're better. This, like, honestly, does this roster look like they're better than they were last year with Kyler Hurt and J.J. Watt retiring and Zach Allen and Byron Murphy leaving in free agency? That's not a team that looks better. Rodney Hudson, who missed most of last season, it just doesn't look like a team that's better. Add into the fact Kyler Murray's, his return is uncertain. You have a rookie head coach, but not only a rookie head coach, a rookie general manager, a rookie offensive coordinator, and a rookie defensive coordinator. That is a lot of unknown things. That's a lot. That's 100%. A lot to bet on, like, to, in terms of when you're assessing risk, you know, that's why you give them a low projected total, because there's just so much unknown about that group. It's in the free agency, the free agency that they've had has been underwhelming. If you look nationally, now, yes, Jonathan Gates, you don't need, nobody ever won anything in free agency. Yeah, you're right. Nobody won games with free agency, but they've made low-key, underwhelming signings. And when you already had a team that looks worse than it did, and then you add what feels like underwhelming talent, and you have a new coaching staff that has never been in their positions before, and your franchise quarterback is coming off an injury you don't know when, and you don't know how effective it'll be afterwards, and you don't, there are some people who are starting to doubt him as a franchise quarterback. Wow. Just listen to all that doubt.
Right. And doubt and unknown equals low win total. I'm actually surprised it was at 5.5. I really was. I thought it would come in at 4.5.
Yeah. So, yeah, you know, honestly, so if they, now, when it comes to the reason why they have the and a half is because you don't want any pushes. So it, what probably feels like what would have been, if you wanted to try and get it at minus 110, you probably set it at an even 5, which would end up, it gives you a possible push, or maybe even 4.5, and then you set the price at like minus 120 on the over and plus 125 on the under. There's that, right. That's a thing you could have done there as well, which, by the way, you can do alternate lines for those that you can do that with games. You probably can do that with futures. So if you want to take a riskier bet and go, oh, we're going to do an alternate line, like let's do 6.5 and go over 6.5, you're going to be able to get a much riskier, like, probably something like plus 180, which, you know, if you want to play that game, you know, but now we're talking to degenerate stuff here, right?
Right, exactly.
All right, Seth. Later we will have this week, we will at least do one more show. We'll determine whether that'll be Seth and me. If there's some news talk, actually, we might break down some stuff. I need to listen to what Gannon said. It'll either be me breaking stuff down, but I think I will go through, you know, kind of focus on the projected win totals on all the teams in the NFL, give you my takes on those betting lines. But with that, this is episode 411. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. This is the Rise Up Seared Podcast. Thanks for listening, as always. Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Seared Podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up, Sea Red.